This is a special Thanksgiving edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Ben Brown of University of Missouri and FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. We'll hear from Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. And we'll get a wrap-up of what the cycles and the charts are telling us from Merrill Crowley at AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois. Ben Brown, agricultural economist with FAPRI, that's the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri, and with MU Extension now joins us. Hi, Ben. Thank you for being with us. I'd like you to delve into a subject area for me from a broader perspective as it relates to soybean exports from the United States and where we stand for this marketing year.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had a great run here as of late on soybean demand, just in general, whether it be exports or domestic use. We're still behind a little bit on the export picture from where we'd like to see, and we've seen shipments soften here as of late. But you know, a week ago, we got the largest single week volume for soybean exports in the history of the complex, you know, the history of weekly reports. And that was largely known ahead of time, just given the daily flash sales that we've seen. So the market wasn't overly surprised by that, but that certainly helped support the rally in the soybean market that we've seen here over the last, I'm going to call it 4 weeks of the calendar year. So, you know, the soybean picture has certainly improved. I think we are seeing a little bit of relief, even a little bit of relief in the market to kind of offset maybe what has been a bearish picture for the first 2.5 months of the season, given a nice little run here to finish the calendar year.
Have we caught up on exports in that case? Are we on pace at this point?
Yeah, so we're still behind, right? So like U.S. soybean export inspections were roughly about 60 million bushels on the last week of data. That's down from 71 million bushels the week prior, and a 4 week rolling average of 81 million bushels. So, you know, we've fallen, you know, behind a little bit. And honestly, like, this is a little bit earlier than where we normally see soybean shipments start to fall off. Part of the reason for that was we didn't have the sales or the bookings to really support continued shipments here through November and into December. So when we look at the cumulative soybean exports and for the year, you know, we're about 30 million bushels behind the seasonal pace where we need to hit our current export target. And that deficit grew 10 million bushels week over week. However, when we look at that sales, and this is kind of what I was teasing at a while ago, the sales have certainly picked up, and that would suggest that we'll see some larger weeks of inspections in the next couple of weeks, or at least as we start to think about turning the calendar to 2024. And that's promising news as we look ahead.
Is that because is fear that South America, Brazil in particular, will not have as many exportable soybeans given the beginning of their season? And those, I think the earliest beans would come out of the South, where it has really been just rainfall flooded as they try to get that crop in.
Yeah, so I think it's a mixture of both, right? So we have seen some weather scares in South America. The expectation, at least right now, is still a record soybean crop out of Brazil. Argentina, you know, has the potential to recover nicely this year compared to what they've seen the last couple of years. And so there I think still is this broader, you know, feeling that there's going to be soybeans coming out of South America, but maybe not as many as what was initially anticipated. And certainly, given the tightness in the global soybean market, I think China, which is the world's largest buyer of soybeans right now, at least they seem to be recognizing the risk and trying to put some sales on the books to basically provide some insurance. So I do think it is a little bit of a weather premium out of the South American market that's turned product back to the United States. But U.S. beans are now starting to become more competitive again, now that we've seen river water levels increase somewhat, as we've seen beans start to kind of become a little bit more scarce in Brazil from last year's harvest. And that certainly is allowing the U.S. to become a little bit more competitive on the global bean market as well.
Coming through the summer months, we discussed on the air oftentimes what was expected to be a shortened export window out of the United States because the season from Brazil with such a large crop last year would extend into what normally would be our window. That appears to have happened. That shortened window also would mean that they would pick up their export pace in that late January, February timeframe. Any reason to think that won't happen?
No, I think that's exactly kind of what we've seen play out to date. I am a little bit worried about this dip in inspections, like the physical inspections of soybean exports here that we've seen as of, the last 2 weeks. That does concern me a little bit because that would, in previous years, would have signaled almost the end of our season, or, like getting closer and closer to the, the peak of the window, the soybean export window. I think that peak may be a little bit later this year. The big risk, though, is if it does look like South America is going to have a large soybean crop, do they just delay their purchases and buy South American soybeans at a later time?
Is there concern on your part that China will switch where they're bringing soybeans, those purchases that they have made from? So switch from the United States to Brazil, or that they will just cancel altogether?
Yes, there is. I do have that concern. And I think that is a very realistic concern, especially this year, given that there's this, large crop in South America from last year, another record potentially again this year. The U.S. demand, or well, let me just put it this way. The U.S. is growing soybean crush demand quite rapidly, I guess, over the last couple of months. The fact that, we're not exporting as many soybeans to begin with, right? The expectation that we export, 1.7, 1.8 billion bushels rather than 2.2 billion bushels, we're already lower, and now we're already talking about not even meeting those expectations. So I do think there is concern that we see at least changes or cancellations out of the soybean complex. But that's not to say that those beans won't get used. I think we could use those domestically. And by the time we get around to the end of the marketing year, we could be talking about larger domestic demand and even weaker international export volumes for the U.S.
You mentioned the potential increase of exports out of Argentina. Probably two reasons, I would think. First, more crop because they've had such dry weather in previous seasons. And I'm wondering what impact the new leadership in that nation, an economist at the helm now, will have on potential exports.
Yeah, so over the weekend, we saw Argentina elect a new president, kind of a shock to both of the major political parties in Argentina, and really signaled a desire by the citizens, I think, for change. And this is me being American, sitting here in the United States trying to analyze their politics. So, that's my very crude, overview, or, at least the way I see it right now is that there was just a growing desire for change. And that's what led to this. The new president or the president-elect is certainly suggesting some major changes to the economy within Argentina that would be beneficial to their ag industry and really help grow the industry and even provide some more exportable supplies onto the global marketplace. And so, from one hand, that could be a bearish sentiment for U.S. crop producers because it's another source of competition. On the other hand, Argentina the new president-elect is also suggesting moving away from the peso into the U.S. dollar. Now, that will take time and it will be, somewhat painful to do that. Any country that's done that has faced a, kind of a rough go at it. But certainly, that would increase the potential for further collaboration between the South American country and the U.S. and offer some opportunities on that front to trade products. So maybe a little bit of a mixed bag here in terms of what it could mean ultimately for U.S. agriculture producers, but certainly, for the agriculture industry of Argentina, this is a potentially a positive down the road.
And because we're in Argentina, they are an exporter of wheat as well. And that has been a driver in the marketplace, not Argentina, but the war in Ukraine and the ability to move wheat out of Russia frankly, the last couple of years, or the fear, drove that marketplace higher. And wheat's been coming out of Russia in record amounts over the last 2 years. How do you see the global wheat and coarse grains that would include corn playing out in the next couple of months?
Yeah, so you mentioned the wheat coming out of Russia, and that's probably a little bit of an understatement. There's lots of wheat coming out of Russia that has really kind of dominated the global wheat marketplace. If there's one question I get more often than anything else, it's related to wheat. And I think the reason for that, and these are questions by farmers, and most of them still have wheat to sell, right? So like it's not hard to put together the picture as to what's happening in the countryside, especially in a state like Missouri and even Southern Illinois, where we've seen double crop wheat kind of have a little bit of resurgence here on the higher wheat prices. Producers, responded to market signals and planted wheat. And now they're sitting here saying, hey, what happened to our $12, $13 wheat when we're looking at $6 wheat? And my response has been, the wheat market was a little bit like a rubber band. It stretched way too high on one end and it snapped back, and it's maybe now snapped back a little bit too far. We're seeing a little bit of recovery in that market, but certainly I don't see us, rallying a couple dollars in this wheat market, right? Like, I mean, the wheat, there's just a lot of global wheat. We've got a lot of wheat here in the United States to sell. And even a drought year potentially doesn't get us back to $8 wheat. So it's going to be a challenge, I think, for people with unsold wheat, just to kind of market that, knowing that they planted it under the conditions when we were seeing $12, $13 wheat. And we've certainly come well below that. 50% down, actually, is what we are year to date.
That in combination with the supply of corn at 2.2 or there billion bushels in the United States, feels if that marketplace will not move very much in that case.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of feed grains across the board, even in the grain sorghum complex. Grain sorghum has seen a very solid year of exports, but we also had a lot of exportable supplies of grain sorghum to send. We've got corn, even though it was a little bit of a disappointing year for, I think, some producers across the region. We still, as a country, have plenty of corn. And as I look at the demand drivers for, I guess, really the corn market, I'll stick with corn here for just a second. As I look for the demand drivers, domestic ethanol crush has been supportive. I think we're going to use a little bit more feed because we're certainly putting a lot of feed consuming animals into feedlots. So I think the corn for feed use will hang in there and be rather solid. But there's just not enough demand drivers on the corn side right now to justify moving higher on prices. And I really feel like this 460 to 480 range that we've kind of found ourselves in, right? A couple of months ago, it would have been 475 to $5, and we've kind of drifted a little bit lower than that. I really feel like that's kind of where we're going to find the corn market, maybe all the way through summer into next year, just given how much corn we have and kind of just the solid but stable pace of corn demand we've seen. There's just not that major driver out there to really shock the markets. A lot of people always bank on China coming in and buying corn, and that certainly would be a very bullish rally. But we've only seen that 1 year. In all the years people have been talking about large corn exports to China, we've only seen it happen one time, and it's just hard to bank on that happening again this year.
Ben Brown is an agricultural economist with the University of Missouri and MU Extension, along with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist here on campus with the Farm Dog team. He joined me a few weeks ago to discuss an article that he had written along with Daryl Good, exploring how well the two of them did when in the mid-2000s, the price of corn, soybeans, and wheat climbed, and they wanted to know what maybe the midpoint of all of those would be, the new plateau might be. I asked him how well he did along with Daryl Good.
Well, as you and I can both remember, when crop prices really started taking off in the fall of 2006 and then really took off in 07, 08. Big question at the time was, okay, is this another step change in the level of grain and oilseed prices like 1973? Or was it like 1995, 96, a big spike with a return back to the old price levels? So that was the big issue. And obviously, how you answered that question then told you a lot about what you thought about things like farm income, farm finances, and especially farmland values and rent. So it was a big ticket question. And Daryl and I decided, well, we'd just be brave and really stick our necks out. And we made a prediction at the time that this was not 95, 96. This was 1973 for different reasons, but it was a new era of grain prices. And so we had a very simple, as it turns out, methodology to forecast the new average price level and trading range for corn, soybean, and wheat prices. And as you say, it kind of turned out remarkably accurate now, 15 years after the fact.
I was surprised by how simple the method was. I roughly knew that it was simple, but can you explain the calculation?
Sure. One thing I want to make sure to give credit where credit is due to my partner in this research, Daryl Good. I was really influenced by his argument as a basic framework for thinking about the movement of nominal, unadjusted or for inflation grain prices. He believed that the markets moved basically in a big sideways trading range for decades at a time, and that the jumps didn't occur very often, but when they did, it was kind of a stair step event. And so we basically took that idea and said, here's what we said. We said, well, in corn, we determined that there have been two previous eras in post-World War II. In the first one, from the late 40s to December 72, the average price of corn was $1.28. Then we had the step change to a new and higher trading range in starting in 73, and the average price for corn was $2.43. And again, these are Illinois average monthly prices received for corn in Illinois. And we said, probably the best we could do is say, okay, the last step change in the average price, long-term average price of corn was 90, was an increase of 90%. What if we just forecast that again as the next step change? Basically a doubling of the average price level is what we forecast. And that gave us a average price forecast for corn in the new era of $4.61 a bushel. And we made that forecast first in September 2008. And it's one of the more interesting experiences of my professional career. Boy, did that create a lot of discussion when you come out and make such a bold prediction like that. Daryl and I were probably a little naive and thinking how much heat we would get on making that kind of prediction. And it continued over the years.
As it turns out, it was really close when you calculate the last 15 years.
Yeah. We say that the new era started in December 2006. And since over December 2006 through July 2023, which is all the data that we have for what we call the new era, the third era since World War II, we forecast based on that little simple methodology I talked about, 461, the average price for the 17 years since December 2006, $4.59 a bushel. We're only 2 cents off.
You also had a range. It was pretty close as well.
That's right. You know, in particular, what's fascinating, I mean, again, I want to give credit to my, you know, great friend and brilliant market analyst, Daryl Good. You know, this was his idea, and that you kind of, you know, to start marketing crops, you know, if you could have just even some basic knowledge of the trading range, that's really useful, right, Todd? At least at the extremes.
Right.
And the new era on the bottom side, I mean, I remember when we put out, we said the bottom side was $3 a bushel. Again, these are monthly average, not daily. People said, oh, we're never going back to $3 corn again. Exactly where we've gone back to. We missed that the highs. We had forecast a monthly average high of 670 on corn here in Illinois, again, for a monthly average. And twice we've exceeded that by someplace between 50 and 75 cents a bushel. So we were a little low in terms of what the top of the trading range would be. But again, overall, I think remarkably accurate.
You did this for soybean and wheat as well. How well did you do in those?
Well, soybean is it's a more complicated story. We had a harder time settling on our price forecast over time. We changed it a couple times. Our last forecast was a change was a decade ago. And so if we used that decade ago price, we said 1104, and the actual average turned out to be 1125. So at least for the last 10 years, that's been very accurate. And wheat was another one that turned out to be quite accurate. What we said is this was a corn ethanol driven boom in demand. That was the main driver of the step change in prices for the entire sector. And so we took the corn price as the starting point and then came up with our forecast for soybeans and wheat by just using standard ratios of soybean to corn prices and wheat to corn prices. And our original forecast for wheat prices in Illinois, that's critical, using that approach was $5.80 a bushel. So that's basically a soft red winter price. And here we are now, 17 years later, the actual average was 571. We're only off by 9 cents. And the wheat forecast caught the highs and the lows almost exactly.
Yeah, I see that. So why do you think you were off on the soybeans? What is it about that market that's different? It's oilseed as opposed to a coarse grain, of course.
I don't think that there's anything wrong there. The truth is, Daryl and I had a little bit of a failure of nerve on soybeans. We should have just stuck with our original forecast. Our original forecast in September 2008 was $11.50 a bushel for soybeans. And the average turned out to be $11.25, you know, pretty close on a percentage basis. But in particular, as soybean prices, you know, languished in 2009, 2010, and then starting in 2013, we just decided to futz with the ratio of soybean to corn prices. And our first adjustment was made the soybean price way too low, and then we kind of came back up to it in 2011. So I think that's the honest answer.
So we're 17 years in. Any guess on how long this era will last?
You know, that's a great question, Todd. The last two post-World War II eras lasted about 25 and I believe 34 years. That's a long time. I mean, I don't think there's anything magic about the length of the previous two eras. They do give us some historical, you know, based on that historical perspective, we might be about, you know, maybe 60% to halfway through the current era of crop prices. But that's incredibly hard to predict, and we don't really come out and make any predictions about how long it will go on.
Any reason to think that the next step up would be not up but down?
Well, I mean, as an economist, I have to say logically that can happen. The demand shifts that cause the step function increases in the average price levels are, you know, there's nothing that says they couldn't, you know, have a, reverse those demand shifts. Maybe we have some kind of technological change that kind of like in the 50s and 60s with, you know, the kind of the chemical agriculture, maybe something comes out of genetic breeding that makes us even much less susceptible to drought, something like that, you know, that's possible. But going against that is just this basic idea is that once you go this long and you build the cost structure, the fixed cost up to the level that we have, you know, it's hard to get prices, you know, so, you know, that kind of dramatic decline because there's then a reaction in terms of production levels. Basically, everything kind of gets calibrated to this new average in terms of cost levels and returns. And it would really take a dramatic and permanent decline. I guess the only thing I could think of today as we look out maybe a decade or two into the future that that could happen, maybe this scenario. EVs are adapted faster than I expect. And at the same time, there's a complete failure in the efforts to convert corn into ethanol into jet fuel. And so there's just excess capacity of one of the biggest demand sectors. You know, maybe then you would get a shift down in price level. But it would take something really dramatic like that.
Thank you.
Always enjoy it.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist in the College of ACES here on the University of Illinois campus. He'll be on campus December the 15th for the Farm Assets Conference at the iHotel, by the way. You can too. You need to register, though, for that event. You can look under webinars and IFAS on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, or just go to willag.org and follow the links for the Farm Assets Conference. Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois now joins us. Thank you, Merrill, for taking some time with me. You and I are talking on Wednesday, which is the day we would see some of the export numbers, but let's ask it in this form earlier in the week because it's Friday when this is airing. What did the export figures look like from USDA, and do you have some thoughts on what that might mean?
Well, we're seeing improvements, and that I think is the best thing. This morning we got a couple of good sales, not really great, but they're good sales. 110,000 metric tons of soft red winter wheat to China, and 128,000, that's about 5 million bushel of corn to unknown. So I wonder if maybe China might be finally coming to our market for some corn. We are basically competitive. I would think that China, to make sure it has the numbers that it needs, would be in the market. However, the current numbers for corn are pretty dismal. Last month, we shipped about a third of what we shipped last year, so in corn. And the beans seem to have caught up. Maybe the corn will catch up too. It's just going to kind of depend on that weather down in South America. And, you know, every time you have a weather market, everybody gets really, I don't know what you call it, excited, which I understand that. But I think, if I remember right, Mato Grosso is about 27% of the entire bean crop. So if Mato Grosso is where you're having most of the drought, even if you lose half in that area, you're only taking about 13-14%. It's still a big amount, still would do some good things for business here in the U.S., but It's also a pretty large drought, and it's awful early yet to see where this is going.
When you take a look at the charts at this point, again, we're talking on Wednesday, not Friday, so there may have been some movement in the marketplace. What do they tell you about where the trade is? And you can talk about cycles or any other sorts of chart patterns that you might see.
Well, everybody's talking about 450 low in corn. And if you go to the continuous chart that expires with expiration chart, that's when it ends. We already got a 455 and three quarter low in September. So we actually have made that mark. Corn, basically, if you look at the drop we had back in 22 from from March to July, we have equaled that drop this year now down at 480 on the March corn. And that should mean that we see some sort of follow through higher. We have divergence on the chart. That again is also saying that we have a low and should see some sort of move higher. Not certain really at this time how high. We got pretty good resistance at $4.90 to $5. If something really gets going with the drought in Brazil, or maybe China suddenly starts buying corn, 550 would be something that would be kind of the top. And I mean really the top of this on any kind of realistic rally. Cycle lows right now are due February, March. Late February, early March. The seasonals are down into the 24th of this month, and then they turn higher into December. So this rally that I'm looking for right now is going to kind of be short-lived, the East Jan, and then we're going to move down into the cycle lows. After that, you know, I'd have to reevaluate. Now, on the soybeans, we have looked at completed a downward correction and are in the process of moving higher into the end of the year. The first resistance 1440, and I'm thinking maybe a move to 1440, 1450. Again, if something more develops in South America, a strong rally could take us to 15. And again, I'm looking for that somewhere in the East Jan time period. Seasonals are due for a low on the 30th of this month, then turn higher. Cycle lows that I have are due at the end of February. I do have a minor cycle low in Dece. I think the larger ones are going to push us higher over that minor low. Chicago wheat looks to be making a 9-year low. And if so, it's coming out on the tail end of the cycle window. Stochastics is making a low that has occurred about three times in the past. When I say the low, it's a low. I mean, it's something you don't see very often. And that says, again, also suggests a rally may be imminent in the wheat and possibly up to resistance of 730. So that's kind of my look at the charts right now.
Farmers have been behind in their marketings for both corn and soybeans. Does that have an impact on what your seasonal and charts tell you?
It certainly does. That's why I'm not really looking for a big rally in anything at this time. On our commitment of traders report last Thursday, we had only 34,000 contracts net short for the commercials. Now, if the farmers are selling, they're going to have a bigger net short because they're going to be hedging. So that suggests that farmers are only 25 to 30% sold so far. And so then you ask yourself, what will get that farmer to sell? And some say it's flat price, others basis. Answer I kind of like best is time. Time will get the farmer to sell. And, you know, here we come into the end of the year where we have loans, and they call February John Deere lows. And the other question then, of course, what happens if they start to sell? Well, in my opinion, your basis and your price is going to suffer. And basis right now is pretty poor as it is with comparing into most year. We're also seeing that in Brazil being very sluggish in their sales. The corn price is below production cost. They have a stronger real. And so you could end up with farmers in Brazil and farmers in the U.S. both selling at the same time. So it's hard to imagine us going very high on any rally at this time.
Hey, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and thank you for taking the time with me.
All right. Thank you, Todd. I think I want to just hug your loved ones this Thanksgiving, giving thanks and showing David gratitude. leads to a happier life. So there's way too many people have left my life lately, and I'm thankful that I took the time to be with them and say goodbye.
That's always good advice. Thank you so much, Merrill. Merrill Crowley is with AgTraderTalk.com. You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org.